Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today are filmmakers Jonathan and Josh Baker, twin brothers, directors of a new sci-fi action thriller called Kin, which has been on my radar since I started getting slobberingly excited about it when I first saw the trailer back in May. So welcome, guys.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
Now, this, like I said, I get excited about science fiction. I get excited about horror, especially indie productions. And the first trailer for this blew me away. Just the look of it, the sort of close to, you know, the just the teetering edge of apocalyptic failing society. A young boy finds a otherworldly device. I'm just going to leave it at that. And So you have this action thriller, you have this sci-fi edge, and then you have this family road trip bonding moment because the boy and his adoptive older brother have to leave town for reasons which we will leave to the imagination for the film goers.
For now.
And just the entire look and feel of the trailer just blew me away. So
that's awesome to hear. Yeah, I mean, look, we find it, even for ourselves, it's kind of a hard one to define. We like things that are not easily being able to be placed in a box. And, you know, for this film, it is multiple things. It's a lot of our tastes in cinema and genre filmmaking combined. Yeah, I feel like there's a touch of 80s nostalgia in there, wish fulfillment films, you could say. And then there is a mix of crime drama in there with touchstones of, you know, some recent films, things that we really like that are a bit grittier, like maybe Out of the Furnace. And then there's some big sci-fi themes that are put over the top of this. And really the idea was to try to make grounded sci-fi as realistic as possible in a family setting.
And family is a big part of this movie because you have like the younger brother who's black and the older brother, he's adopted. His older brother is white, but they still care about each other. You get that feel just from the trailer, and that grounded family dynamic, especially in this day and age where any and everybody can become family, it just sort of excited me a little bit.
That's awesome. I'm glad you responded to that. I mean, it is a story about three broken characters all in their own right, kind of lost and finding one another and coming together to really create a modern sort of unconventional family of sorts. You know, you've got Eli playing a young African-American teenager who is adopted. You've got his older brother who's just coming out of prison, and he's kind of getting to know his younger brother for the first time. And then they meet on the road a runaway girl that is, we don't know much about her past, but she's, you know, there to kind of watch out for herself, and she doesn't know any other way, really. And she falls in almost like this older sister character and kind of connects, like, even against her will a little. Yeah, and it's the threesome of these guys on the road and how they kind of create this little unit that is the heart of the film.
Now, this film started out as a smaller story. You guys had done a short film called Bagman, which got all sorts of attention at South by Southwest a few years ago. And tell us how Bagman came about and how you expanded that story to be Kin.
Yeah, well, Bagman was a short film that we put together literally just to try something different on the side that had a bit more length. It was 15 minutes long. We could play with a little bit more dramatic material because we were making a lot of ads at the time. And so ads are normally, you know, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. So we wanted to have something that we could experiment with a different voice. And it was about making something that played with your expectations. It was something that maybe felt more of a Sundance film when you were entering it and you knew kind of where this was going, and then flipping it on its head and doing something very different in a sci-fi way at the end of the film that people didn't see coming. So that was kind of the structure of what we wanted to play with, and I think that was fairly successful from the feedback that we got from it. And I guess in some ways, people think that we made the short to get a film off the ground, and you know, today there's a lot of proof of concept, and we find them a little transparent at the end of the day, because people kind of just throw all the visual effects that they can into this little short that kind of describes the film, and then, come on, please, give me a film off this. And we didn't really do it for those reasons, but we were smart enough to realize that people are probably going to ask, and so we put an idea together. We went away to Costa Rica, and we sat there and was like, what interests us about this story? What interests about the themes that could come up through this? And we realized quite quickly, and this should be no surprise, that it was a story about brothers. And it was a story about two brothers that are so different from each other, visually, where they come from, their backgrounds, the way they look at the world, and just bring them together by the end of the film. And that story could kind of survive without this giant alien space weapon that we've managed to put in as this kind of MacGuffin in the film, and which is, becomes a bit of a character for itself. But that's really where the sci-fi is. But at the heart of it, it's an intimate story about these two brothers.
Yeah, the in the trailer, you can tell that the gun, the weapon that he has found, that Eli has found, is has some weight to it. It's actually a real practical effect. And I think I saw something where the people in black who are chasing them to, I'm going to assume, to recover their property, a lot of that looked like it was practical too. How much did you spend designing practical effects, and was that something you really, really wanted to do?
Yeah, it was. We come from a post kind of background. We've been directing in advertising and a lot of visual effects based commercials, and so I have a lot of experience in that world, and I think it is a little bit of an expected answer these days of using practical effects, using practical props. It is a thing that a lot of people like to do these days, but we just wanted to stay away from green screens and creating backdrops and worlds in a very fake kind of environment on set. And so we love bringing a very textural vibe to everything, from the quality of the imagery that you saw in the trailer, the grain that's in it. It all has a very gritty quality to it. But there's also, you know, just having practical props on set, not leaning into CG heavily, allows your actors to experience things in a very real way, especially when you have a story about a young boy and an actor that doesn't have the most experience in the world. This was his first film, and so, you know, anything we could do to make that more real for him, we definitely did. And so this plasma gun that we came up with for the short film was designed by these guys called Super Vixen, friends of ours, people we used to work with back in Sydney, Australia. And we came up with this weapon that didn't have a front, in a way. It was like, it didn't have a traditional muzzle the way you would normally think of for a gun like this. And it folded up into a box, so it just became this big chunk of heavy metal. And it took a little bit of discovery to figure out how it worked and how you use it. And that's kind of one thing that we went into for the short. And then we had the chance, which you often don't get, to kind of have a second go at something. And so when it came to the film, we all sat down and said, all right, we're probably going to use the same rifle, but can we improve it? Can we like tweak some of the lines? Can we fix a few of the things that we that bugged us on the short? The scope we improved and took to a whole different way, so it had a bit more detail. And it was really cool, the opportunity to get a second go at it for the feature.
Nice. Now, the cast for this, aside from the young newcomer Miles Truitt, you have Dennis Quaid in here, you have Zoe Kravitz in here, you have James Franco here in what looks to be a very, very intimidatingly frightening role. How did the road to casting all these people go? Like from the time you had your script and you knew what kind of feel you wanted, how did these people just come to you?
Look, casting is a really exciting and incredibly frustrating part of the process, where it's it's something where you get to throw down names on page for every role. You probably got a top five for each one. And at the quality of actors that we were aiming for here, you kind of have to go one by one through this casting process. So it takes a lot of time as well. And so a lot of it was about tone. A lot of it was about, like, does that actor belong in this movie? And so when it came to Zoe's role, Zoe was our number one. She was someone that we looked at from the very beginning that has an effortless sense of cool that you really can't manufacture. You can't fake that. And we thought that was very important for the role. She's also incredibly warm, and I don't think she's really had the chance on film to be as warm as we know she is. And I think we managed to pull that out for this role, which we're really proud of. We had Jack Rayner, an Irish actor that comes from a lot of indie film, has done a whole range of stuff. We love Sing Street that came out. So he was one of the first people involved in the project. And then Miles Truitt was the complete other end, where this is someone that we had to cast far and wide across America to try to find the kid role. Which I think we pride ourselves on our kid casting. I think we do pretty well at that. And what Miles does better than most is he has this sense of maturity, emotional maturity, that is really hard for an actor at 14 to have. And I think that plays into his role of Eli really well.
So what kind of thought process was there behind the design, the tone, the look of the film? Because from the trailer, it looks like it's sort of bleak and cold. I don't know if the cold is just because it's winter or because something's happening, but the tone that I got from the trailer sort of lent a desolation, a desperateness to the situation. Mm-hmm. And that sort of seems to echo what you want to have, what you are aiming to have through the road trip that the brothers are on.
Yeah, no, I think all of that just came from a place of wanting to create a dichotomy in the tones of sci-fi in a very grounded, gritty, real sort of dangerous world. And because it was a film that starred a child, we didn't want to do a kid film. We wanted to have sort of adult themes and very challenging kind of emotions within a brother and a family dynamic. And so a lot of that was just, you know, the coldness, the grittiness of a place like Detroit was important to us. You know, Detroit has such a vibe with like a decay in its infrastructure and in its buildings, and all of that just lent to this tone that felt like it was a little dangerous.
And with that, the dynamic of just the environment plus the dangerous situation they're on being chased, it just, everything about what I've seen so far just has me curiouser than 10 cats. And I blame you guys.
All right. I will take that. That's all. We don't apologize for it. No, it's an exciting tone. We've described it to people as like a Moonlight meets District 9. And we haven't really seen those two kind of things together with this very serious character-driven storytelling that has larger kind of blockbuster genre ideas and visuals.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of conversation about duality for this film, and you can even see it in the weapon itself is very glossy, and, you know, on the outside it's textured, but then on the inside it's a little more iPhone and slick. And then you've got these gritty locations of Detroit and along on the road. And I think those two things visually play off each other in a very fresh way that you're not used to seeing some of these, you know, giant films done in that way. And hopefully people will respond to it.
I hope they do respond to it, too, because there's no rule that says you can't have a science fiction film or a horror film that doesn't have, you know, character or believable situations or just somebody who's, you know, they're not a hero, but they're doing their best, and maybe they fall flat, and that's what being human is. So I'm.
Absolutely. That's the principal rule about that, and we love that. Yeah, I mean, that is literally what we're trying to do here, and I think you've nailed it perfectly, that hopefully there's a hunger for some stuff that's a little less perfect. And we talked about that a lot, even when it came to the cinematography. We talked about, yeah, just not being perfect, and throwing away all the glossiness that feels machine-made. And I think, fingers crossed, people see that this film is made by two skinny Australians from a short film that they made in 2014, and it's, handmade.
Well, I, for one, hope Kin blows everybody's expectations out of the water because we need more stories like this. We need more support for storytellers like what you guys are doing here. And I, like I said, for someone who's become a big fan of indie science fiction and indie horror, just because that seems to be where people are taking chances with storytelling, thank you.
No, I agree with you. That's a world that's, they're pushing the envelope a little bit more. And, we made this film for people like yourself that just crave something a little bit different. And, we have a lot of comic books being made into movies and remakes and redos and YA books and all of that kind of stuff that is off existing stories. And we wanted to tell something that was completely original and completely unique, and hopefully, add something really fresh to the sci-fi genre.
Well, I'm looking forward to what you guys do next because, like, there, some of my favorite science fiction books to read are mashups. They've got a little bit of crime drama, a little bit of supernatural fantasy, and I'm like,
Totally.
this, why can't we get more of this on the screen too? Netflix is playing with it a little bit, but we can have more. There's plenty of content that can be shared. And I'm looking forward to seeing Ken and whatever else you guys make next.
Thank you. Well, appreciate that very much. And it seems like you get what we're trying to do. So it was great to jump on the phone. Thanks for your time.
Excellent, excellent. The movie is Kin. It's coming out August 31st. Look for it in theaters near you. And if you have a few minutes, check out the short film Bagman. It is actually online. I think it's bagmanthemovie.com. Is that right?
Yeah, you can find it on Vimeo. It's not hard to find, but
Yes.
it's the young African American kid with a bag. That's probably it.
Well, we will have links to Bagman the film where everybody can watch it. The what are you what else are you planning to do? Is there room for
Well,
a follow-up to Kin or something fresh?
that's an interesting question. That's a tough one. The answer is yes. I think we know where this is all going, and I think if there's an interest and people are intrigued about what the further story is, I think we've got one. We definitely didn't start this whole process saying, we've got a finished trilogy, we want to make them all, but if people are interested, yeah, I think there's a further story. I think the aim is to fall in love with these characters, and especially Eli, this character. You want to believe the dynamic between these two brothers and the world that we're setting up, and the contrasting tones that we're setting up as well between the sci-fi and the very real world, the relatable stuff. So, if you buy into that, there is certainly a future to these characters and other stories that can exist. It's all about the response, I guess, and that's the old business side of filmmaking. Yeah, I think there's probably too many studios out there planning well before they know the response of their film. And so I think everyone here is smart enough to see how, hot the water gets.
But you guys are having fun doing what you're doing, right?
Oh man, we pinch ourselves every day. I mean, this is an amazing opportunity that we've helped create. And we look back, I think of us as kids, riding around on our BMXs, exploring spaces and under bridges and all that fun stuff that you'll see at the beginning of with the character of Eli. And I just think, like, telling that kid or those kids that we'd one day make a movie in Hollywood. That's pretty mind-blowing stuff. So now we're very honored to be where we are, and we plan on sticking around for a while.
That's just so heartening to hear, because when filmmakers truly, truly love the projects that they're diving into, that little bit of love comes across in the finished product. And when the films work, they work better because of that. That's what I believe.
Yeah, we believe that. I mean, this is a very personal film to us, even though it's about, you know, dark characters coming in from sort of other worlds and, you know, sci-fi weaponry and tech and you know, crazy kind of stuff that's being thrown together, mashed together. It's still a very personal story, and a lot of our tastes are in this thing. So, you know, we feel great as directors coming out and doing our first movie and letting audiences know what kind of stories we like to tell and the kind of movies we like to watch. Just like you, we're big sci-fi fans.
Excellent. Well, keep us informed what your next projects are. I'm sure that I will be interested in it. Jonathan, Josh Baker, thank you so, so much for your time today.
Oh, we appreciate it. You know, thanks for having us. Always good to chat. Stay in touch.
The movie is Kin. It is in theaters near you on August 31st from Lionsgate. Check your local time schedules, your theater. Go see this on the big screen. You will not be disappointed. Thanks again, guys.
The other thing I'll add is that we're out in IMAX for a week as well, and 4DX picked us up. So there's a bunch of different ways you can experience this film. I know seeing it on a 95-foot screen really blew us away. So, yeah, get out there and check it out.
Wow. Okay, it's on IMAX. Everybody go see this on IMAX right now. Thanks again, guys.
All right, take it easy.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
I highly recommend everybody go check out Bagman, the short film from Jonathan and Josh Baker. You can find that, like I said, on Vimeo, or you can go to bagmanshortfilm.com and you can watch it there. Read up on the cast, the making of it, and about how it got turned into a feature. There's some little notes there, but more importantly, August 31st, go see this movie in IMAX. I'm eager to see what those special effects look like on the IMAX screen, because from the different featurettes and the main trailer, those look awesome on my tiny laptop screen. So definitely will be keeping an eye out for whatever Jonathan and Josh are working on next. We have some other cool stuff coming up soon for you. We have Impending in the next week or so from our good friend Lil Kid, who does the Nerd Soul reviews. He's got his hands on a fresh new copy of Supernatural Season 13 on Blu-ray. And I hadn't realized until recently how huge a Supernatural fan he is. So we are looking forward to his deep dive into that brand new Blu-ray box set. We have some other stuff coming up soon, more reviews. People are looking forward to fall movies getting ready to start. The Predator is the big one that I think is coming up next. And The Nun. A lot of people, a lot of Conjuring fans looking forward to The Nun. So we'll get some feedback on those when those are about to come out. But for now, just keep an ear out to Slice of Sci-Fi for some future indie horror, indie sci-fi coverage. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions on something to cover, feel free to call. The phone number is 602-635-6976, or you can send an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through iTunes, through Stitcher, through Google Play, TuneIn, and Krypton Radio, our good friends over there. If you would be so kind, please leave us a review on either iTunes or Stitcher. The reviews help raise our profile on those platforms, letting other people know that the show is something you enjoy and you might influence someone else to check it out, and so on and so on. You know, that old commercial, they tell two more and they tell two more. Well, that works. That's what social media and reviews are for these days, on a positive spin. You can follow us on Twitter, speaking of social media, at Slice of Sci-Fi over there. Yes, you will be talking to me if you start tweeting at me, and most of the time I answer. I do. I really do, especially if you're talking something cool like old comics or old horror films or old sci-fi TV shows that have fallen off into obscurity and cannot be found. I had a discussion earlier about the old Fox TV show Strange Luck, which starred D.B. Sweeney, which is not available on streaming or on DVD or probably never see it on Blu-ray. I don't know if it ever existed legally on DVD. I have seen ads for it. I have not actually found what looks to me to be a legit copy. It's kind of the same weird thing with Jeremiah Season 2. You can special order a DVD, but what? Is that a real DVD? Really? Is that legit? I mean, it smells hinky. Smells hinky, so I'm staying away from it. But that makes no sense to me, because that was a fun show. I enjoyed it. And it went a full season, too, and took a really cool supernatural potential twist at the end of the first season, and like all Fox shows of its time, disappeared after one season, never to be seen again. If I remember correctly, I think that show aired the same season as a medieval Celtic Roman conflict show called Roar, which was the very, very first time anyone laid eyes on Heath Ledger on screen. He might have been 18, maybe. He was real young, but still, a presence. Anyway, yeah, I wish Strange Luck was on DVD. Thank you, Fox, for never giving me the chance to own that or to stream it. We'll have words later. Where were we? Social media. Yes, we're on YouTube. Check out the videos over there. Darren and Noah have done some really cool reviews, looking into expanding our original video content. Keep an eye out for that. Hopefully, if things go well, that'll get up and running by the end of the year. Of course, all this content is also reflected on the website, sliceofscifi.com, where you can check out this show, our past shows, our past reviews. You can leave your own commentary on the reviews we have done, and just have fun diving into the geek arguments that we know everyone enjoys. Heartily so, I hope. I want to thank everybody who is supporting our efforts here. Your pledges through Patreon really do help keep the lights on around here. If you want to contribute to the support of the show, patreon.com/sliceofscifi is the place to go. Pick a level to pledge at. I am still working out how to provide better perks for different levels. And feel free to suggest a few. Just throw something out there. We'll see what sticks. As always, I want to send out my heartfelt thanks to the geek rock band Psyfried for their musical contributions to this show. If you want to check out more geek-flavored rock and roll by these guys, Psy-Fried is the website, psy-fried.com, or you can search for Psy-Fried on YouTube. Their videos are entertaining. I highly recommend A Tall Ship, which is their tribute to the Star Trek 50th anniversary. And my other favorite is Zombie Prison Blues for all those Johnny Cash and zombie fans out there. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.